Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What is up, Gypsy Gang? We're back for Supercross Companion 2020. This is going to be a little bit of an announcement podcast slash discussion. Yesterday, we got the news that Supercross would be returning to Salt Lake City to host the remaining seven rounds of the Supercross Championship. Lucas Myrtle texted us with the news, and I was like, dude, just call into the studio and we'll have a bit of a chat about it. Really, really cool. Me and Myrtle, we've been friends for a really long time, and I knew that when we started doing the video call things into the podcast that Myrtle would be a dude that I would be talking to quite a lot, because like I said, he's been a really good friend to me, and he's always been a guy that would share information. Like, he was never one of these coy managers that just try to keep you in the dark constantly. He is an agent to guys like Jet Lawrence, Hunter Lawrence, Joe Shimoda, Ryan Villopoto. He's definitely a big deal in the industry when it comes to that agent world, and a really, really rad guy. So we spoke for ages just about what this whole seven round, I guess, mini series at Salt Lake means, who could win, who looks good. We spoke a lot about Hunter and Jet. So yeah, super informative podcast with a really cool guy. As always, these podcasts are brought to you by the legends at Boost Mobile. Anytime you actually see anybody calling into the studio, I have my iPhone hooked up to the streaming PC running Boost Mobile data. That's the most reliable way that I can get people in and out of the studio remote. And yeah, so this is, it's not an ad, like, that's just literally what we do. So Boost provides the internet that lets our guests call in, which is epic. Also supported by the legends at MX Store, their showroom is open. They are pumping orders out the door. The same day shipping still is in effect. You can head to mxstore.com.au for anything you need. Also, tracks are opening up, so we need to start getting the ball rolling with getting those bikes out of the garage and onto the dirt. Also, to the guys at Thrill Seekers, make the best seat covers in the game. You can head to their website, thrillseekerscollection.com, and use the code GypsyGang. We're also sponsored by the guys at Rival Ink Design Co. You can head to www.rivalinkdesignco.com. Use the promo code GypsyGang for 15% off your order as well. I've got a couple more codes to throw out at you if you need some fist handwear. The best gloves in the game. The best gloves in the game, made by the coolest motherfucker in the game, Sam Moore. You can head to fisthandwear.com and you can use the promo code FUCKJACE to get 20% off your order. And if you are in the market for some new flannos, you can head to Dixon Quality. That's with two X's. DixonQuality.com.au. Use the code RAMPTHIEF and that's going to get you 15% off. Also, the guys at Cricks, you can still buy a new or used car and go in the running to win that brand new KTM 450. Yeah, really appreciate you guys listening. This was a really cool podcast. And man, I'm excited. We will be streaming the Supercross Companions live from now on. So if you can't watch it through your like TV provider or on the internet, you can watch us free on YouTube. Really excited for it. This has got me pumped. Life's getting back to normal. Thanks for listening, guys. And
from the gang called Gypsy. Gang and they come and get. gypsy gang. Gang, gang.
Gypsy.
Gang and they come and get gypsy. Gang. Gang and they come and get gang. Gypsy gang. Gypsy gang.
I met a gypsy.
All right, Lucas Myrtle, my brother. What's happening, dude?
Not too much, bud. Just got home this afternoon. About 6 o'clock, sorry. Got home about 6 o'clock tonight just from Cleveland, from that Fight Club event.
Yeah, how was that?
Epic, epic. It was, dude, the guys were sending it yesterday.
Yeah, really?
Like Kevin and Ryan and Weimer, Travis. Dude, it was awesome to be there. They got a pretty good following. You know, I was stoked on it because it was actually Rob Bidas, Denny Hartwig, and Ryan who came up with the idea, you know, and they pitched it to me probably like 4 weeks ago. And I'm just like, how's it going to happen? Like, I was like, not a chance, you know? And they pulled it together.
Yeah. I mean, it looks sick. I haven't had a chance to watch it. I was going to try and pull a companion together for it, but it was just a little bit too short notice for us to pull it together. But I was going to try and watch it with the boys, just watch some of the replays. But it seems like it's getting quite a bit of love and press post-event, and like even all day yesterday, it seemed like it was sort of going off as well.
No, yeah, it was solid. Like, it got a lot of PR with nothing else going. I think that was the major reason we pulled the trigger, Ryan and Rob, and that was to put on something special with no content going around or no racing going on at the time. So it's done well, you know, done really well.
I think,
and I thought the product was good.
Yeah. I just can't comment on it yet, but I mean, I'm sure you know what's up.
I mean, the production, like, because it was put together in such a short time frame, the production needed a. You know, you weren't going to knock it out of the park. You know, and I knew that going in, like, for where it could have kind of crashed in my mind, what I was worried about, like the server went down or all of a sudden, it being around live events, you know how many things you can plan for, but you've got to have the right people to plan for the unplannable, you know? Yeah. And that, I thought they knocked it out of the park. And, you know, obviously the production had a little bit of issues. I think everyone kind of warmed up during it, but, you know, moving forward, I think it's a stepping stone and a potential for other pay-per-view and direct income kind of events, direct competitions.
Yeah, I think it's sick that, I mean, purely just for the fact that, you know, it seemed like it was a bit of a by riders kind of organized event. And I think any time that you get a four-time Supercross champ like Villopoto, and then you get all of the supporting cast that was there, I think that anytime that comes from a rider, like the fact that it came from Ryan, there was such a big push from Travis and then K-Dub, like, to me, I think that is like actually pretty unprecedented to have a group of riders come together and put an event like that on, you know?
Yeah, like I said, Ryan will even tell you, when they pitched it to me and called me, I was sitting here at the desk. I'm just like, I love it, but how are you going to pull this thing off? Like, I absolutely love it. If you're wanting me to pull this off, I am too busy, you know? And we had certain phone calls we had, and those boys ran with it. And in my opinion, knocked it out and created, there will be more of them coming. You know?
Yeah, right.
So,
is it going to be?
And I like that platform for Moto, not even Moto, but imagine what I could do with that platform on, you know, direct content, a sponsor release, but not pay, you know, people wouldn't have to pay. It'd be cool, like team release stuff. Like, I think that there's legs to it for sure.
Yeah, just to like the concept in general.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's I think that kind of by riders for riders thing just is, it's impressive. And it's cool, like it seems like Ryan these days has sort of done, like, I don't know, like, I get who's like a good example, but it seems like Ryan was just one of those like really sheltered kind of not sheltered, but kind of like withdrawn guys during his career. And then it seems like post career, when you look at events like Straight Rhythm and then this event that he does and the 125 Nationals and all that sort of stuff, it's like I don't know. I'm fucking down with this version of Ryan Villopoto.
Yeah, no, everyone is. It's fun, you know.
Literally, it seems like everyone is down with, like, this dude. We're like, fuck, man, I wish we had this guy, but then he probably wouldn't have won all the titles if he was being this dude.
No, you can't have both. Like, yeah. I never represented Ryan during his race career. It was just after he's retired. So I wasn't there. But I can tell you, and I can tell you, and you know, because you've been around the guys before, when you're paid to win, anything but that isn't going to cut it. That's a fail. That's a fail. So when you saw Ryan at those races, he is paid a lot of money. And you know, and I know, it's not fun. It ain't fun going, like, as an agent going to A1. Like, I'm not just like, oh, this is just such a fun time. Now, athletes are 10 times that or 100 times that. So it's pressure. They train all week, right, for a 20-minute, 15-minute main, which the whole world would judge you on.
Yeah.
So, and I always hear when people go, dude, this guy sucks or he ain't cool. I'm like, no. Remember, this guy either has a contract coming up, he's training, he needs to get a result, or, hey, he just signed a new deal and he's paid most. So anything but win will have the guys, the 22 guys in this truck behind him, going home depressed, pissed off, worried, stressed. That's like, it's immeasurable, that amount of pressure that you just can't be like the Ryan you see now.
Yeah. And then like the guys, it's not like Ryan's going to have a bunch of dudes that he can kind of relate to and turn to. And it's like, you know, you can kind of turn to a guy like yourself as an agent that's been around the sport for a long time. But like, there's really no one that you can kind of relate to because those people, you're on the gate with them and like you're competing so heavily with them.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I try and relax. Like I try and take that away and you put the right pieces in play and be very conscious of it.
Yeah.
You know, it still lives there, you know, it's still very much a part of it, you know, and the new Ryan, like when I started representing Ryan, I was like thrown in the deep end a little, like when I took it on because he didn't really have the happiest partners, not that there was any beef, but.
Yeah, well, he wasn't really like a dude that was like actively trying to like service his partners. He was just the dude that won.
Yeah, yeah. So all his relationships were very much steered, I feel, towards this winning thing. And then it didn't really evolve after it stopped, you know?
Yeah.
And it's no fault by anyone else or whatnot. So when I inherited Ryan and to do his stuff, it was, we made the manufacturer change right away. We changed our gear, helmet, a whole lot of stuff. Now it wasn't because that's all that was available. It was more like, mate, like if we're going to do this,
fresh start.
Let's just create new history with each partner moving forward. And so,
we could talk for ages, but I've got a very particular thumbnail on this video and it's going to be going up on YouTube because you sent me a text. I haven't even read the full text. I actually wanted to wait to read the text until we were on this bitch together. But yeah, you sent me an interesting text, which prompted this phone call, which was kind of overdue anyway. But this is from you today. Hey guys, update. We are racing May 31st in Salt Lake City. I can tell you we will not be able to leave and we are stuck there for 3 weeks. If you do leave, then you will have to be back there 2 days prior to the race to be tested again. Also, we will have to be there 2 days early to be tested. Schedule is as follows. May 31st, East. June 3rd, East. June 7th, East. June 10th, West. June 14th, West. June 17th, East. And the series finale, June 21st, East, West. God damn, boy! That's the shit we've been waiting for. That's the text I've been waiting for, Myrtle. You come through.
Yeah. Dude, it's been a stressful time.
Dude, and then even since you sent me that text, you've had
just
so many
for
calls.
Clarity on that text, that could change. That might change in the next hour. Fuck. You know, so that was more the mud map at about 4 o'clock this afternoon. No one's really was meant to know. You're not posting this till later. So, you know, everyone, the key people in the industry, we're all chatting and you know, got a lot of work to do to get it going, but stoked, mate. Like, I don't think people understand how the value of a racer is if they race.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Like these guys race, and I don't. It was unprecedented, and kind of very concerning for a lot of people. But yeah. Like Feld's been working on this for about a good 6 weeks, seven yeah. weeks, and like it went from okay, pandemic, we're not racing till September, and yeah. I was like. Fact, you know, it's fact, it's not happening to holy shit. If Supercross comes back early with no crowds, which we can pull off, we'll be one of the first sports back in America.
Mm.
Live on on NBC, not NBC Sports, but live on NBC is yeah. the TV package. And I gotta give props to Feld. Like, dude, they've done an awesome job. They cop a lot of shit, right?
Yeah.
From people in the media and whatnot, right? That they're just.
Hey, I'm really one of them sometimes too. I'll admit, yeah. like I can't sit here and say I don't.
Yeah, but everyone kind of quizzed them, like, do they care about the sport? Do they?
Yeah.
Do they want to grow it? Right. So the answer is yes. Like, the fact that they're going to put up the money right now, and this is going to get overlooked by a lot of people. Feld's still running, like. This race, they've still got to put all the money into building seven tracks, getting everyone, you know, re-employed, you know, yeah. everything going. For they're not going to bring one bit of dollar ticket revenue in, which is how they make money. So Feld probably potentially is going out $3-4 million on this yeah. to grow the sport,
yeah.
To grow Supercross, and they get there. And you, I was so stoked because if you asked me if they would, I would have said no, they'll kill it. There's no way. It doesn't fit in their business model. They're a promoter. They sell tickets. They put bums in seats. But for them to go, no, this is the biggest opportunity our sport can have, being one of the first sports back and live on NBC. I mean, that goes to every, you know, that will get the sport where I'll be walking down the street and people will be talking about it, you know,
yeah,
not
yeah.
just a Saturday night competing against college football or, you know, the likes. Baseball, hockey, you know, people have a lot of choices.
Yeah,
and, you know, and that's why the growth kind of just grows a little bit. But yeah. for us to get this, I mean, I'm over the moon.
Yeah, dude, it's so true. Like that was definitely one of my thoughts through all of it. Is because I've been like kind of critical of Feld in ways, but I guess it's not really critical of Feld as a. I feel like my criticism of them is not necessarily a criticism as such. It's more of just like, I kind of like, they shouldn't really give a fuck. Like they got Disney on Ice. They got so much other stuff that would be so much more profitable. So, I mean, I don't feel like Feld runs Supercross as though it's the only thing that they do. If that makes sense. Like if you look at Adam Bailey and the boys from AME, it's like, that's the fucking only event they do. Like, that's their flagship thing. So every single detail is just, like, so down to a T with those guys. And it's all around, like, moving the sport forward. Because it's, like, that's the horse that they've got in the race. Whereas with yep. Feld, it's, like, they've got so many horses in the race that it's almost understandable that, you know, Supercross isn't the household name. It's not Disney on Ice. So it's, like, I get it. I wish it was their only deal. But... with that being said, you get to a point like we are now where they're like, well, we do have millions and millions of dollars that we can spend. What is going to be the most viable live sport that we can bring back and get on network television? So it's kind of like, now I'm kind of glad that we're not their main horse, but they've got the cash to spend on us, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, definitely. Definitely. Like I said, if we were talking about this, 2 months ago, it's September until it's not coming back. I would have said it's not coming back until Feld could put butts in seats. I would have, yeah. dude, that's their business model. I would have said, no way that's going to go down like that. But they've done it. So it's super cool.
So now, dude, like the bench racing, I mean, we had Hill, like we did our first, Gypsy Tales Worldwide the other day, and we had Hill on, and we sort of spoke about who basically wins this 450 title if it is the seven rounds with the two rounds per week kind of deal. Like, we sort of started speculating, and we kind of both agreed that if it went to Phoenix, Ken pretty much smokes everybody. Mm-hmm. He was like literally unbeatable there this year. But then you've got the kind of question marks that come up with like his fitness and his health. And I mean, you're kind of beating a dead horse at that point, because it's like, I don't think we're ever really going to know. But Hill seemed to think that if it went to Salt Lake, which is where it is going, then the advantage squarely goes towards Tomac, because he obviously lives at altitude, very similar sort of similar climate, and that altitude will play a part with two race weekends, like essentially two race weekends per week for basically the end of May and June.
Yeah. The biggest thing on Salt Lake, I think, I don't know if you remember, it's really windy, dry, and dusty, shitty dirt. Like, it's not like a Dallas or a Phoenix good clay, or Anaheim clay can dry out. But, you know, when we were last there, I mean, the first 30 rows, like, and on the backside of the stadium, we're just getting nailed with dust the whole time. Like, and remember, the event last time we were there was when Anderson, remember, he broke the spokes and the wheel, and they had to change the wheel. It was just a dry kind of blue groove, crappy track. And it's no roof right now. So you're going to bring in a possible, from what I'm hearing, some mud races. We could get some rain. Yeah. And then you're going to also get the altitude, which is going to play in. So to go on to your point, who do I think? I think it's going to be the most consistent guy.
Yeah. Who is the most consistent guy right now then?
No, now it's a shootout, right? Who's going to be going? Like, I don't think you could have judged it until Daytona, mate. Like, because everyone's making their own slow runs. A bad race doesn't blow you out, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you still had time. It's more of a marathon. Now, this thing's a sprint to the finish. Yeah. So everything's going to matter. So, you know, can Tomac throw a rant? Tomac can throw one away very easy.
Yeah.
Very easy. Like I think for raw speed, it's him.
Yeah.
But if you're asking who's going to win the title, and if I stick to consistent, I think it's Ken, because I think Ken will get good starts and he'll do what he needs to. And I think Tomac will blitz him in a few times. But we all know Tomac can go, it can fall apart quick, and he can drop 25. It's over.
Yeah.
That's what I'm worried about. Tomac will have to blow our minds and go get starts and not make those Tomac mistakes where next thing he's 10 seconds out and then flies off the track, you know? Like, and that's what, if he does win the title that way, hats off to Eli. Like, he's a run and gun guy, you know? He'll gun and run and do whatever. Where I think a Ken will be, he'll play, you know, we break down percentages. I think a 3.5 will probably, he'll look at that. If I have a 3.5 finish rate against, I'll win the title.
Yeah.
So if he goes in like that, you know, he percentages would be to win that title going on past of what Tomac's results are.
Yeah.
He should get it.
Man, no one really treats this shit like Moneyball kind of, you know, like the way you're talking. Like, I know you're just a big sports guy in general, but it's like no one really treats Supercross like a Moneyball, to where it's like, well, last year a 3.75 average won the title, and it's like, all right, where are we sitting? Are we above average? Are we below average? Like, I always kind of wondered that. Like, even at JDR, like when I started to see, like just by being around the sport week in, week out, like really starting to see the trends, see the way that it was sort of, it played out quite similar every weekend. Our sport really lacks a lot of that that thinking, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, for sure. I like to break it down because it makes sense to to my questions. Or sorry, I got tickled in my throat. So, like for outdoors, for example, who I always think whoever has the highest start percentage, highest start position, will win an outdoor title.
Yeah.
Then you'll find that like this year, Cincerello, his start percentage was higher than anyone else. He was always in that top five. And any contender was throwing a 13th in the mix and whatnot, you know. And Ferrandis came back strong for sure, but his start percentage killed him. If you broke down Ferrandis' outdoor season last year, his start percentage killed him.
Yeah.
It wasn't every speed. It was the start percentage where he started and what he had to deal with against them, his main rival, Adam.
Yeah, no, it makes so much sense, man. But I just like, yeah, we just sort of don't seem to play by the numbers in our sport the way that other sports do. And I just know that you're a big football guy, and like, I know that you sort of know sports when it comes to that.
I'm a big analytical guy. Like, you know, there's no room, you know, more in my job. I don't, like, if I'm selling an athlete or whatnot, I gotta know what he is, right? Yeah. You know? So say if it's, say for example, you look at Hunter Lawrence, when I signed Hunter, he was starting 19th and then coming all the way back.
Yeah.
So you had to show what that meant, what that really meant, and showed that potential team owners and teams here. It was like, no, look where this goes. Look what this does and does. Right, he's on a semi-factory Suzuki at that time, you know, so he wasn't getting good starts, and it's not the greatest bike anyway. So, that's an example of just like, it's not just like, hey, you like the guy, you want to sign him. You have to, you know, you have to be competitive and back up what you ask for.
So with the Lights Championship then, so you represent the Lawrence boys, you represent Cooper. Who else have you got on your roster these days?
RJ Hampshire.
Yeah. Who's having a great season, by the way.
Trent, Jacob Hayes.
Yeah.
Joe Shimoda.
Yeah, sweet. So what, I guess first things first, like when is... So Jet will obviously be back for every round, and then so will Hunter, right?
Yeah, Hunter's going to make his debut in the series. Dude,
that's sick. What's it been like being around the Lawrence camp with the way that obviously Jet had... Could you have pictured Jet having the kind of breakout that he did this year? Like, I mean, I don't think anyone could predict the drama that kind of, you know, the way that it happened, but... I mean, I definitely thought after seeing him at Marvel Stadium that he was really going to be, like, he was going to be as good as everybody sort of said he was, if not better. But then A2 came around and it was just like, Jesus fuck, like, we have, like, this is like a new thing.
I knew it.
Yeah.
I knew he was going to be good. So he wasn't in his plan to ride Supercross this year with Honda America and Geico and everything. It wasn't the plan. What the plan was going, hey, go outdoors, right?
Yeah.
Because it goes against everything I've been preaching, that like you can't take a young kid Supercross that young. They're just not ready. It is such a big environment, big space. So what we did go, heck, let's do a full Supercross prep with him as if he was racing. As if he was making his debut, and just see where we're at. If we stumble and we fall, we just know we'll be 10 times ahead of where we would be if we just do outdoors and then go, oh yeah, you're racing Supercross. So why wouldn't we do that now? You know, and Darren and Osho, like that was kind of the plan after Monster Cup. Let's just do that. And then from there, like it slowly evolved. Like, dude, Jet's really good. Like Jet's doing good. And we're like, we know it. And then the lap time started rolling in. It's like, yeah, Jet was the fastest today. And I'd get that phone call. And I'd be like, holy shit. So then obviously more conversations happened between myself and Darren and Osho and the team and Honda here. And they're like, he might be our best guy, you know, and not saying anything bad against
them. Yeah, yeah.
Jet has this freak ability. He's a special athlete. So I knew it, and I was texting like a couple of the media guys before the season. They said, hey, how's your guy going to do? And I learned from being young and full of energy. I was like, he's not going to lack speed, is what I said. He's not going to lack speed, but we're still going to be a 16-year-old. He's still going to be a 16-year-old out there. And so what happened at A2, although it took 10 years off my life, that's always, you're going to see more of a few more of those issues. Very Carmichael, Bubba Stewart, you know, that they're going to go so fast that the only way to learn to hold it at that speed is to let it bite you a couple of times, you know?
Yeah.
And I was, and at A2, honestly, I came down from the suite down because I'm like, oh, he's going to win this thing, you know? So I went down to the floor and I saw that in the last lap. I was standing right there to the right of that start gate. He had a look up that inside. So I wasn't even mad. I felt he was going to go because he went into that 180 bowl.
Yeah.
He was going to punt. He was going to go straight up the inside there and stop if he needed to. That's what Jet was going for. So I'm like, wasn't even mad at that. It was just like he could have relaxed in the whoops and then took a beeline to the exit of that corner at him. You know?
Yeah. Dude, so, I was having all these conversations with Jed after Melbourne, because we hung out a little bit there, and he was, you know, he was like typical rookie sort of thing, and talking about like, oh, this and that, and I don't know, I just like, I really want to get a win, and I really want to get this, and I really want to get that, and like, blah, 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 and I ended up texting him back, and I was just like, hey, man, so let's just play it out like this. Let's say if I walked up to you at a Coolum Club day when you were 9 years old, and I told you that you were going to win a Supercross race at 17 years old, you were going to lead wire to wire and fuck up the 16. Entire field at a Supercross race at 17. If I told you that as a 9 year old kid, what would your reaction be? And he's like, dude, if I knew I was going to win a Supercross race at 17 wire to wire, I'd be so fucking pumped. And I was like, cunt, you're 16. You don't like, who cares if you don't need to win this season? Like, let's play it out like you don't need to win this season. And you're still like, I would guarantee based off like how you're riding right now that by 17, you'll be winning like a bunch of main events, you know? And it's like, I just was trying to give him that analogy of like, if I went back to you 10 years ago and told you you were going to win at 17, you'd be pumped. So like, still be pumped to win at 17. Like, you don't need to win this year, even though we all fucking know you can. But then again, it's like, I think what he did at A2, I think it was literally like instant legend status. Like, he literally created a brand for himself and almost like a legacy for himself at 16 years old. It's crazy.
It was kind of like his hero moment.
Oh, you know? For sure. And how many more of them do you think he's going to have? Like, it's untold many of it's possible.
There'll be a couple coming up.
Dude, for sure.
So, but, and then you, like, everyone thinks A2, but remember what he did at St. Louis. He was tracking Faulkner at the whole main, and then he clipped that hay bale, and it bent the rear brake around.
Yes.
And the funny thing is, after that, main event, he is like, I was going to punt Faulkner.
Yeah.
Like, I was going to get it. Like, and I'm kind of thinking, hey, most people would have just been like, dude, this is a comfy second, maybe third. No. He looked me in the eye and he was like, dude, I was going to win that. Like, and not like, oh, I was going to win it and does that make you feel good, Mertz? Or this, you know, that's what everyone in the world wants me to do. No, he looked at me like, as if it, you know,
it was just like point blank.
It's Saturday night. No, it was going to happen. Yeah. Like, so he does have a certain confidence, but so, you know, so does Hunter. Hunter's the same way. So, yeah, Hunter's a superior athlete himself. So the two of them and Jet's just been feeding off Hunter, which you're going to see. In all honesty, Hunter's every bit as good as Jet on a Supercross track.
What coast is Hunter going to go to? Is he going to go onto the West Coast when we go back racing here?
I believe so. That's the plan now. You know, I like how many East Coast rounds there are, but but because of the rider situation at the team, it probably makes more sense to put Hunter on the list.
Yeah. How do you think that did it affect Hunter at all, seeing, because like obviously he's going to be super happy for Jet. I'm not close with Hunter at all. I know Jet just from us hanging out so much in Melbourne. But yeah, I mean, obviously he's going to be happy for his brother, but like there's definitely that moment should have already happened for Hunter, and it kind of hasn't yet, right?
Yeah, no. Hunter won Des Nations.
Yeah, that's true, I suppose.
Yes, and that put him on the map, and then he finished
the
strong.
We all forget quick.
Yeah, I know. And that's my job. I'm their representative. But no, Hunter won Des Nations. When was the last time someone, an Australian, won the Des Nations Plus?
Oh, dude, I wouldn't even know if anyone's done it, to be honest.
And he caught and passed Osborne, you know? And then, you know, like, he was special. He is special. And yeah. Then don't forget, he has had some unfortunate setbacks on Supercross. But I can also tell you, I've represented a lot of kids. Hunter's just caught, it's just been bad luck.
Yeah.
Jets had just as many big ones, you know, or, you know, lessons are probably easier to call them on the Supercross during the week as Hunter. It's just like, dude, honestly, Jace, every time he's hit the deck, he's got it. It's cracked his collarbone. Like he did two collarbones. And then, you know, it's just been that from that pushing, which every guy goes down. You've seen it. Guys go down at the practice tracks a lot, you know, and especially good guys, because they're going to be pushing. They're pushing. Yeah. A lot of guys can do a lot of controlled laps, but you'll never see any speed out of them, you know?
Dude, so, it's scary, man. Like, there's something scary about practice track crashes, eh? Like, I've seen some fucking big ones, man, where it's just like, there's no crowd noise, there's no reaction. It's just like, it goes silent. And then
you hear bumps and slapping.
Yeah, and you just fucking run to the dude, and you just hope they're all right. Like, dude, I saw James crash one day at the Stewart compound, and it was fucking huge. Like, so big. And the instantly the mood, like, we were there testing with Malcolm and Matt Moss, and like the vibe was rad, everyone was pumped, like, you know, we were filming, it was a good day. And then Jimmy goes down hard, and then it's literally like the fucking life got sucked out of that whole place, and just everyone starts running. But there's just something scary about those practice track crashes. No, he didn't get hurt at all, bro. He went home. But like, dude, just, it was fucking huge.
Yeah, the worst thing is, if I'm not there at the track, is when getting, I know everyone practicing. Yeah, I shouldn't be getting phone calls ever from a mechanic or a parent between 10 to 12:31.
Yeah.
So, dude, I've been on comp, and I'll see, or a trainer calling me at 11. A trainer should not be calling their rider's agent at 11 o'clock when you're on the track. Yeah. I only mean one thing.
Yeah.
They suck. And it's a part of the game. But that's just the case on Hunter. Like, everyone's going to be like, oh my God, he can ride Supercross. He never couldn't.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just crazy, man. Like, just the theater of that A2 main event. Like, to me, that was one of the more special main events that I remember ever. Like, I don't know that I'll ever forget that main event and the feeling. And like, I'm so glad that we did that Supercross Companion live in here, and like, we had a sick crew, and like, the reaction, I still love watching that back, because that, to me, like, that main event, that whole night was just this fucking epic, like, spectacle of, this is why we watch Supercross. And it was two of the best dudes that just decided to grab that fucking night by the balls and just literally lay everything on the line. And it's like, to have a 16-year-old kid from Australia be the one that brought that epic main event into the crescendo that it did. It's just like, dude, that was so special to like be able to watch that the way we did.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. It sucked being there.
Oh, it would have been fucking terrible for you,
bro. Dude. I don't even like seeing. I'll never forget it. But yeah, I was just like, Yeah.
I mean, I was so gutted for Jet, obviously, like, as a mate, but then, like, the media side of me, like, knowing what I know about, I guess, I don't know how you even, just, like, the marketability, like, I know what would come from that is in terms of, like, the legacy that it would create for Jet, and it's done exactly that.
Like, people were saying to me after, what happened was better than him winning it.
100%, man. As fucked up as it sounds to say.
I didn't want to hear that. But, like, people still say it. Like, a lot of people are like, what happened? Obviously, it's a blur because we had to get him off the track, make sure he wasn't hurt. Then with surgeons. So it didn't really ever, from when you're just in it, like, it was panic stations to make Phoenix next weekend. That's what it felt like. The moment we knew the injury, could we played it and whatnot. So I didn't rewatch the race. I saw it on Instagram and whatnot, but yeah, it was just a straight hero moment and there'll be plenty more.
Yeah, dude. No, I definitely agree. And I mean, yeah, like, I know it's probably
People were texting, like, it was special. It was special what he did, and you know,
it'll just live way past if he won that race, you know.
Yeah, no, for sure, because then the next one didn't, you know, but he's got to go win that first one, and I think that's the goal for him.
Yeah, right? Yeah, because then it just becomes like that, you know, a hero's comeback kind of deal. So
I'd say let's find this sport needs.
Yeah, dude, 100%, like, that marketability and that personality that he has, like, to sort of go and deliver us a race like that, and then to back it up with, you know, a win, and then to stay being that same cool guy, like, especially at his age, and then his brother comes in, like, I mean, obviously, like, we're fucking biased as Australians, but I think even in Moto Spy, I said that, like, fuck the Australian thing, like, this kid's just, he's the G, like, this is like the kid that we don't have, that we kind of always wanted. We've sort of lost this kid from these kids from the sport. And it's like, and I kind of love that when you look at Jet and his attitude and like the things that he'll say and the way that he kind of will carry himself, it almost feels like he is accepting of that position in the sport. He doesn't really want to shy away from like being a dude where it's like, I'll put on the fucking hero's cape and I'll like kind of risk the things that come with, you know, trying to fly that flag and push the sport into like new territory, I guess.
He's born with built for it. You know, his personality is lighthearted. It's chill. If you spoke to Jet, you would, after, you know, I think he went P1 first practice session.
Yeah.
And he was just looking for the skateboard so he could just skate behind the back of the truck.
Yeah.
You know, like, he doesn't care. He doesn't, this isn't, oh, this will give me this, or this will, if I do this. No, he said to it, he races for his family. He races for that. And as comfortable as it is walking down the street, that's him riding a motorcycle kind of fast. That's one of his reason he can be so relaxed and so chill, and that personality, and then we all encourage it, you know, is because of just the way he approaches racing. He ain't stressed that he can't do nothing. He ain't stressed that, oh my God, if this doesn't happen, he don't care. Yeah. He don't care. He's going out there to win the main event. Yeah. And then that's what he wants to do. It doesn't mean anything else, which is a lot of athletes will be like, oh my God, I got to do this in the corner. I got to do that. Jet laughs at that. That's not Jet.
Mm.
Not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all. Maybe 10 seconds before the gate drop, he locks on.
Yeah. So let's talk about the lights class a little bit then. You've got pretty... Well, fuck, the West Coast is kind of done for me, I guess. Like, I don't think
Ferrandis
is
letting go of that. Well, I think Ferrandis is one of the best supercrosses in the world.
Dude, straight up. Like, out of everybody.
I think you could put him on a 450 right now, and he's rode him at Paris and whatnot, and he's really good there on a 450. Yeah. I think, you know, he used to battle with Hurling for the world title and whatnot. So yeah. that, like, he's a class act, you know, and he copped all that heat at Anaheim too. I think he's a class act. Like, people have their issues with him. I'm more looking at that ability on that motorcycle, that factor.
Yeah.
Dude,
there's no one that's got big dick energy the way that Dylan Ferrandis has big dick energy. Like, he needs a spare gate next to him, bro.
Yeah, no, I'm, you know, people personality as a motorcycle racing fan, as if what I'd look for in that, like, Ferrandis comes with that. It's like a lion, you know what I mean? Yeah. If you're an animal, if you had to put an animal next to that, that he comes as tough, and he's going to make it tough on a lot of guys moving forward.
Yeah. And so what about the East Coast? Obviously, that's like a little bit of a closer title. Is it like 8 points in the East?
Yeah.
Who do you think is going to do the best there? I mean, Shane McElrath, like, Shane's obviously, he's actually like, he's a West Coast dude in terms of like where he lives and like grew up and has spent the most time training. And then you look at Salt Lake, you're looking at some pretty dry, dusty conditions, but like you said, a couple mud races, maybe that sort of plays into the East guys. But where do you see that title coming from?
RJ Hampshire.
Oh yeah, you're a fucking guy. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
You can't say anything else other than that. That's fine.
No, RJ Hampshire. that title, take RJ out of the picture.
How far back is RJ, first of all?
I think like 13, something around there.
He's all right. He's in it. He's in it.
No, we're not. It's not ugly. I may be wrong. Don't quote me on that. I haven't looked.
It sounds right. Let's go with that.
Okay. So we're definitely in that. That series there between McElrath, Sexton, and RJ, that one's going to come down to consistency. That's the one. Who's going to throw, who's going to drop 25 or who's going to drop 17 or 16 points in a round?
It's so pretty easy to drop 12 points.
Huh?
It's pretty easy to like drop 12 points.
Yeah. Yeah. Like it's going to be a different vibe and everything at these races coming up.
Yeah.
That dude, anything's going to happen. And I would just be playing the numbers game.
Yeah.
Dude, third may get it across the line.
Yeah. And so who do you think has, let's take RJ out of the picture.
I think Chase looks a little bit more consistent.
Yeah.
Chase should be, he's been in, you know, doing it a while. He should get that title, in the position he's in.
Yeah.
But again, if he drops 16, RJ wins, McElrath finishes third, dude, we now have, now the whole dynamics changed, right? And this is where I'm going, especially with these 250 class, this 250 East, is now the dudes are going to be sending it. Yeah. Now it's a straight shootout. And when it gets pushed to that level, someone ain't going to make it to, you know, someone's going to finish off the ugly, you know, meaning. Yeah. So that one is scary. That's
anybody's money.
No one's gonna feel comfortable until that last race at East.
How do you think that just the seven rounds over what are we gonna be looking at? Like 5 weekends essentially? Like how do you think that's just gonna sort of play out in general?
Well, it's over 3 weeks, I believe.
Oh,
you
3 weeks.
3 weeks. So 7 and 3.
It's a lot of racing, man. And then what's the deal with like testing and riding going to be? Because like no one can leave Salt Lake. Like, I'm sure that's the phone calls you're going through now.
Yeah, no one knows that for sure. Like I filled you in this afternoon. It's that's all going to be ever changing and whatnot. But yeah, we're too early to tell. To tell exactly. Are the boys going to come back here to the house and training? You know, but then it might only be 2 days. What are you going to do? What are you going to achieve in 2 days, you know, to worth get coming, flying back and forth and whatnot. So, mate, right now we're all just going to be chilling in Salt Lake City, Utah and kind of getting this thing done.
It's not a bad place to chill though, to be honest. It's a pretty dope city.
Yeah. I would have rather Phoenix.
Yeah, I was gonna say you probably rather Phoenix. Hey, I ain't fucking mad at Scottsdale either, bro.
Yeah, Phoenix is just, but it just the dirt and that track would have been better.
Yeah.
If you ask me, my last choice would have been out Salt Lake City, but
yeah, but didn't Salt Lake?
It's not my call.
Didn't Salt Lake put up a bunch of money though, so that they could actually get the final off Vegas?
Yeah, something where the Salt Lake, Utah tourism, something like that. Yeah, yeah, they're on like tough blocks, I think.
Yeah, they don't give a fuck about dirt. They're just like, bring us the eyeballs to the city, pretty much.
Yeah, so we'll see. We'll see. That stadium sucks too, but
well, it's not like pretty empty.
Yeah.
So what do you think, like, generally the impact of this whole COVID-19 thing is just going to have on the sport? Like, it's kind of gnarly here, dude. Like, KTM has pretty much, I heard, and I've full, this is not a fact, this is literally what I heard, it's off good people, but KTM and Husky pretty much, like, pulled all their funding. Last I heard, they'd sacked all the second and third riders on teams, but, like, had kept the first riders and that to take a pay cut. But, like, it seems like it's really fucked up the racing side of things over here, which was kind of on shaky ground anyway. But, like, are you guys sort of hearing any stuff that you're going to have to kind of deal with contract-wise, manufacturer-wise, cuts-wise? That, I mean, obviously, there's probably shit you can't talk about, but, like, what's your overall feeling on just the industry in general?
It's a great question. There's certain facets that are going on right now. Dealerships that are closed obviously can't sell bikes, can't move product right now. And then in the states they are opening, they can't sell enough bikes per day.
Yeah.
So I'm not too sure because I was just in Ohio and Kevin was telling me he bought like a 110 and a I don't know, something else. And he said he was essentially lined up in the dealership to get the bikes. And the guy said, yeah, we done 230 bikes yesterday.
Wow.
So these deals, the other asset is online, direct to consumer. Any company doing that right now is knocking it out of the park, having that record month.
Yeah.
You know? So it's obviously a controversial topic. Like, some people are hurting, you know, and we're going to have to be sympathetic to that. But to answer your question, to know what degree we're looking at, I think some are going high and then maybe some are going low, you know, and it's just really, really kind of picking out who and what the business is looking for a break or, you know, or whatnot. Obviously the guys aren't racing. It's a huge problem. There's no hiding that, but we are coming back racing now. So I expect things to be on the up and up. I think the top guys are always going to be top guys. I think the value in racing will not change. The value of having an athlete wear your performance product or display your logo at the highest level of dirt bike racing in the world, that doesn't change. In fact, it's going to increase with the TV package the series is going to have. So, I don't think I'll waver on anything moving forward right now. Yeah. And not to sound cocky or whatnot, but I believe in the value of a racing. I believe in the value of the clients and regarding the economic climate, that will dictate what I got. But I'm not just going, well, it's not worth that much anymore. No, it's worth just as much, maybe. So.
And then the other crazy thing is just travel, man. Like, you know, we're not really going to be able to do OzX Open if, like, borders and stuff are closed. Like, the whole travel thing's kind of gnarly. Like, Motocross of Nations, I can't see how Motocross of Nations would happen this year. Like, there's definitely, I mean, we're still getting a Supercross series, and I'm sure DC is going to put together something for Motocross. But, I mean, it's going to go down as a pretty fucking weird year across the board, really.
Yeah, it's going to be essentially a bust, like, we just kind of got to chip away and kind of just roll with the punches. There's no answer right now. There's a lot of misinformation getting around. You know, I could give my opinion and be totally wrong or totally right, but
yeah,
it's a stab in the dark. certain people are saying there'll be no crowds until there's a vaccine, then there's a certain, you know, side of the story that's saying, hey, Uncle Bert with, you know, diabetes and this, probably going to miss the Lakers game this Thursday. Yeah. You know, like, you know, are we just going to protect those who need protecting? And then, you know, hopefully it doesn't, you know, go. That I'm not an expert in it. I've done watching the news and stuff, yeah. Like just all misinformation and agendas, especially over here, that you really can't get to the bottom of much. So, you know, Wasserman, the agency I work with, we're speaking with scientists and government officials, but, you know, state to state, it's different. So in California, I don't think California is going to get live events until there's a vaccine.
So hectic, eh?
You know, but then you could go to Texas and they're like, they're going to be way more relaxed and whatnot.
And you can bring a gun.
Yeah.
Come to a live event and bring a gun. You good, boys?
Yeah. So it's super unknown territory. And if anyone was to go and tell you, oh, this is what's going to happen, they're crazy, because it's unprecedented for the world. Yeah. That we're dealing with.
What how much have you had to do with Feld through all this, and like, what's did it surprise you how hard they were trying to push to get Supercross to be like one of the first sports in America back on TV?
Yeah, like I said, if you asked me, hey, is this a possibility, like 6 weeks ago, I said no, it doesn't fall into their business model. We're going to be back in September at either St. Louis or, you know, where a football stadium is. And I would have said, end of story. The outdoor, you know, it's going to go to the outdoors.
Yeah.
Out of left field, I got a phone call on a Friday afternoon saying, dude, we're pushing. It's happening. And like out of the blue, like it wasn't like, oh my God, this is potentially working on and whatnot. It was out of the blue. Actually, I had like 5 shitty phone calls that day, and I'm like, dude, this is a disaster. Like this thing sucks. This is turning into a nightmare. And then boom, out of nowhere. And I heard before, like, we should try to become the first sport back. Like certain team owners were saying that, and that was before that. But I thought it was like, yeah, again, it doesn't fall into what they're going to do it with no fans in the stadium. So for them, I was blown away. So my dealings with them has just been super supportive, and whatever we can do with the athletes and assets and creating some stuff for them.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder if this is like something going forward then that, because I mean, me personally, like, and like I said, I'll admit that I've kind of talk my fair share of shit in Fell with the things that I think could be done better. But I mean, like, every sport could be better, you know what I mean? It's like, if it's not for the people that are invested in the sport and in, especially on like a media front, it's like, if we can't kind of criticize the governing body, then I mean, what are we sort of here for, sort of deal? But it's I guess it's never come from like an angle of like condemnation, you know, like fuck those guys.
No. Roger Goodell in the NFL, he gets roasted and booed. Yeah. You know, the NHL commissioner, he gets roasted. Like, they're, you know, and they have a figurehead. So there's always commissioner of that. And, you know, so they boo that. The only commissioner I think everyone really likes is the NBA guy, you know.
And Dana White, I think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They love him. Genius, by the way.
Genius. Yeah. Yeah, complete genius.
But
I think this men's stuff, like, I mean, for me, like, it mends my, not that I have a relationship with Feld, and you know what I mean? But I think it definitely puts me in a good headspace. Like, all right, there's room for improvement, but I don't feel like a redheaded stepchild anymore as, like, a Supercross fan. I'm like, these guys really are, like, wanting to make it happen. And obviously, financially, it makes sense for them to, like, have any of their events running, but to me, this seems like kind of a step forward for the sport just in general.
Yeah, big time. Like, I couldn't be any more stoked on what they did, how they did it. You know, the amount of calls they must have been on and having to make, dude, it's astronomical how they've got it to get to this point. And just fingers crossed it continues and goes all the way through.
Yeah, well, I don't know, mate. I think we've pretty much covered it. I was pretty stoked to see a text from you today with that sort of info. So obviously we'll wait to drop it so no one gets in trouble. But yeah, man, I've been wanting to get you on to do something like this for ages, man. Like, you're one of the guys that I talk to the most in terms of like boots on the ground over there. And you've never talked shit to me ever. Like, your information is always as good as it gets. So I was excited to see that text, and I'm stoked we actually got to jump on a call for a bit. We need to maybe make this a bit more of a regular thing, I think.
No, definitely. I think you guys are doing awesome. I've known you for ages. Hopefully I didn't bore everyone with my nonsense.
Nah, you're good, homie. You're good. All right. Well,
No, I'm really stoked to come on there and, you know, reach out and, you know, uncover it. So, fingers crossed.
I appreciate you always giving us, keeping us in the loop with what's going on. Like I said, I never want to be putting out information that isn't right as much as I can, even though I say dumb shit all the time, but for the most part I try and be pretty factual, and you're the guy that I trust pretty much the most to deliver that.
And to be honest, I deal with every media the same way. Like,
yeah,
I think if the truth can be told, tell it, you know. Like, if there is something there that what does oppressing not telling journalists or our media and not creating story headlines. It's that, to me, backwards. And look, I'll always tell it straight. I tell it how it is to everyone, you know.
Yeah.
I don't care. I sleep just fine. You know,
the thing, if you don't, it's been one of my things just in general doing this show is that I'd like, I'm a massive UFC fan. And I look at, I mean, part of my motivation for doing like Supercross Companion, like obviously it's just it's what Rogan does with the Fight Companion. You know what I mean? Like they have absolutely nailed the media side of the UFC. And to me, like I want to get this particular show to the point where we're grabbing the attention of the dudes that kind of like that, just the heart, like in MMA, they call it casuals. Like the cat, they know fucking dick. They've never trained. They've never fought. They've never done anything. Yet that sport can appeal to all of those casuals. And it's like, I'm kind of enjoying seeing some of like our YouTube comments and stuff. Like, they're obviously coming from casuals. And I'm like, fuck yeah, we're starting to get, you know, like I'm thinking about the thumbnails that we're posting now. It's like, I want this thumbnail to appeal to fucking casuals, man, that have no they could not tell you more than three riders on any particular race weekend. They're the people that we need to have in the sport, like people that want to go onto YouTube, they subscribe just for the fucking drama, like the shit that we talk. And it's like, no one seems to want to, in my eyes, it's like no one's wanted to like put themselves out there. Like, you're the agent that I talk to the most. And it's like, you're my fucking Ari Gold. Like, that's a great character. You know, like, people should want to kind of hear from that character. There's amazing characters in this sport, but I don't know, for whatever reason, it seems like it hasn't been embraced in the same way. I mean, it's definitely uncomfortable to go through some of the commentary that you have to kind of get in an online forum, like, you know, like a place like YouTube. But fuck, man, our biggest month, we're hitting like a million people. And it's like, there ain't a million people going to a fucking Supercross stadium. It's like, we should be trying to do this. There should be more communication from, agents, media, like even Feld talking to guys, like, you know, the UFC model, the way they've done it's just fucking amazing. And I think that, like, I think we both get it, and that's why I kind of enjoy the conversations we have.
And I couldn't agree more. Like, there are some storylines that have happened in the past that I've heard about, and I'm like, how did that just not go public? That just would have been so cool. And, yeah. and like the Villopoto thing, I'm like, be you to Jet, Hunter, RJ, all that. Hey, if you're pissed off, tell them you're pissed off, yeah. right? Don't say anything offensive or saying, but if someone does you wrong, I mean, tell them, yeah. mate. Get up there, tell it how it is. You know, yeah. I couldn't be any more like the casuals, like you said, the casuals. How do you turn them into full-time fans?
Drama,
we've
bro.
We've got to create storylines.
Yeah.
We've got to create storylines, and we've got to have those people like you, other Weej, guys like that, Mathis, guys like that, telling it in the right way, creating these storylines, and it's gonna grow the sport. But yeah. if it's just a Monday morning factory press release about what happened on the weekend, look, my bike was looking good, first qualifying didn't, bro.
No one gives a fuck.
Go get the fuck out of here. Yeah. Like that crap needs to go.
Yeah.
Like Jet, if you're pissed off, I mean, go let them know. Don't tell me. Go let them know. I'll say that at the podium. You know, yeah. go let them know. You know, obviously, you within reason, you don't want him to go out there and cuss out. But yeah. I don't want him to get up there. You know, the kid's going to be pissed, and then he gets up, you know, shakes the guy's yeah. hand. No, if you're pissed, let people know how you feel. Then well, you can
that
change.
That shit made Chad a hero.
Huh?
That shit made Chad a fucking hero, like the hands yeah. on the neck and the, you know, the stare yeah. downs between him and James. Like it immortalizes you.
Yeah. No, big time. I'll only ever get mad at a client if they pussyfoot around a truth or a,
yeah.
or what happened. You know, I'm strong for telling how it is. I'm yeah. strong to hold people accountable for their actions at that time. You yeah. know, and I could be wrong and people go, that's not right. That's not, no. As a public athlete, as a public forum, it's way different. People yeah. can display their who they are through social media stories all day. But then you're telling me now you're going to be this different guy when you're in, on your job.
Yeah.
It's not going to engage anything, you know? Yeah.
I'm sorry to interrupt you there, bro. I do understand it, though, because, like, I've definitely been around riders when you just deal with the fucking bullshit, like especially Kenny early on in his career, like when we would do a lot of filming, it's like he kind of tried to have that personality, and then even Kenny sort of just, I guess, essentially
beats it out of you.
Just been beaten down, you know. But yeah. even to the media stuff, dude. Like I heard, I heard that Mathis had an issue with some shit that I said, mm-hmm. and it was in the Hill podcast. And like, I don't really know Mathis. I don't listen to his stuff, but I don't listen to anybody's stuff. So like, mm-hmm. I don't really hear a lot of what gets said. Something got back to me that he didn't appreciate the way I spoke to him about the Hill comments. And his argument was, I don't know if you heard what I said, but it was basically like in the Hill podcast, he was telling me that like Mathis was calling Hill a stoner before Hill had ever smoked weed. And he's like, he's like, fuck, at one point I was a stoner, but like when it was literally affecting my career and I had to do like drug tests at 17, but I'd never even done a drug. He's like, that all came from like one fucking journalist. And then I kind of got stuck into Mathis about that. Cause I was like, fuck man. Like it's kind of weird for a 40 year old dude to just like fully fucking accuse a kid of doing drugs that actually hasn't, you know. But it's like,
yeah,
his argument back to that was like, oh well, Hill's an athlete and it's like no matter how old he is, you're susceptible to that as an athlete. Fair enough. But then it's like, can Ariel Helwani get fucking roasted when he gets something wrong, like in UFC, or when if a UFC analyst calls out someone for being on steroids when they're not? It's like, can that dude be held accountable? But it's like, to me, if Mathis made a fucking video talking shit on me, talking shit on him, totally down with it. Like, I don't give a fuck. Like, because you know what? Mm-hmm. It's probably pretty interesting for people to see that kind of, you know what I mean? That kind of interaction between two dudes on different sides of the world doing, you know, like a similar job.
Yeah, see, I can't comment on that situation. Wasn't there, didn't hear it, whatnot. But yeah. like, to be fair, I think a lot of Steve, you know, I think I speak to him a lot and he does, I think the product he delivers now is opinion, but it's also researched opinion. That's all anyone could ask for. You know, so me personally, and I think it's good these guys might have beef.
Yeah, I'm the same.
Storyline.
Fucking earth. Because it's easy to understand. It's easy to understand.
Yeah, and like I said, I can't comment. I don't know that situation well at all. Enough to go one was right or one's the other. But I know who Steve is now, Jace. And I think he's super thorough and finger on the pulse of on a lot of stuff. Like, and the only thing I ever ask for journalists, like guys, is if you to write about me or write about something or you know comment on something, I'll only get mad if you get it wrong, but you never called me.
Yeah.
Right. That's when I'll get mad if you go down that road and you didn't call me and I could have gave you the truth.
Yeah.
Right. But if journalists were to do that, I would have a big problem with it, and I'd call them and I'd, you know, essentially blacklist them with myself. But you know, I can talk on Steve now. Like he's like finger on the pulse, and yeah, I respect Steve a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even the point. It's not even the fact that I don't. You know what I mean? But in terms of in terms of that particular conversation, it's like, man, fuck. If you think I'm a wanker for saying that, like. You can totally say that. Like, I'm fucking cool with it. There can be that thing that then we go back and forth. Because, again, it's like, I know as a fan of other sports, like, I kind of enjoy that shit. I kind of enjoy watching that storyline play out because it's like, we all fucking see the race. The race goes for 20 minutes. What else, you know? It's like what this kind of stuff.
SportsCenter on a Sunday night plays all the controversial stuff of football that day.
Yeah.
They're not saying, hey, Tampa Bay beat the Lions in just a real neat game of football. And it was just a real great game. And everyone had fun out there.
Fuck no, those boys, they all had a go.
Yeah. It was just great. Like, they just looked like it was just the best game of football you've ever seen. No, it goes straight to the fight that happened between the Browns and Steelers. It'll go straight to the controversy, something that the coach said after the game where he called his offensive line garbage. You know, that's what ESPN leads with. They sell a product and they're pretty damn good at it, and it's sports, right?
Yeah.
And that's what they do, and we got to be the same way, you know?
And I definitely, like, I don't want to get into – it's, like, hard because I don't want to sound like I'm advocating for everybody just to talk shit, but it's, like, that wasn't fake. Like, we didn't have to manufacture that. Like, I'd heard from people we both know that – it was like he was upset about it. And it's like, if I heard someone say that about me, I would have been upset in the same way. But I mean, I was just like, fuck, like, that's fine. Like, I think that this is like the kind of conversation that is okay in my mind. But it doesn't seem to. I think maybe it's because the industry is so small. Everyone has to see each other all the time. Like, I guess in the NFL, it's not like these dudes are bumping into each other daily, or you know what I mean? I don't know. It's just a little bit different, and I think that, especially in like the YouTube space and watching how other things do in YouTube, it's like there's definitely I feel like we're not ticking some boxes that I think could like help bring in casual fans.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, you know, the success of your show, the success of all these third party media not tied to stuff. You guys will become more successful as the sport grows, and when success meaning advertising dollars and, you know, viewership, and just content shares and whatnot. The more you have a Jet Lawrence that,
yeah, 100%.
Let's say Faulkner comes in and then and Jet runs up the podium and then just get like, lets him know that not cool. Right.
Yeah.
What are you going to talk about all week?
Yeah.
You're going to talk about Jet Lawrence and Austin Faulkner going head to head next on Saturday night at 9 p.m.
Yeah.
You know?
And I mean, there's a certain level of like respect that you've got. I think that you got to have for people personally. And like, personally, in terms of my respect for Steve, like, fuck, that dude's done so much in the sport. Like, it is pretty gnarly what that guy has been able to achieve. So in terms of like, on a personal level, there'd be no thing that he would like say to me professionally that would make me not like him personally, if that makes sense. If he said shit about me personally, then I'd be like, oh, well, you're a fucking dick. You don't even know me. But in terms of like him as a professional saying that podcast you did with Hill was fucking lame, like blah 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 blah. Like there would be zero offense taken to that. I'd be like, it'd make me look at what I said critically, which I kind of went back and did anyway. And then it's like, then that's just more shit for everyone to fucking talk about.
No, for sure. For sure. Like the amount of people that might don't like me, you know, obviously my job, like four people want something and only one can get it. Three people blame me who miss out. You know, my job's not to be Mr. Popular. It's to be Mr. Popular with my writers, right? So I do, I've always heard, oh, this guy don't like you. This guy, that's fine. That's fine. I don't care. You know, I have enough friends and whatnot. And at the end of the day, if I go to bed, I go to bed knowing I made life better for my athletes a little bit or made leaps and bounds on one person or something, I could give two shits what people think of me or professionally. Yeah. And I'm the same way. If you talk about me personally or my personal life and then have a dig, we're going to have an issue.
Yeah.
But if you just say, hey, Myrtle screwed up that deal, for, you know, Thor wanted this guy, but Myrtle went and took it to Fox, right? He's a dick or whatever. Yeah, sure. Probably was. Yeah. Like, sorry, it's professional sports. It's high pressure. It's high volume. It's performance. The whole world watches. So, you know, you have to make decisions on behalf of with athletes on behalf of themselves that.
And you gotta fucking live. You got a house you want to buy. You know what I mean? Like, there's just there's a certain like economics to it where you can't be mad at people for that sort of shit.
No, and definitely as you get into professional sports, you become people have more and more opinions of who you are, what you could be, or you know, and they get it through a little blurry glass window half the time, and you know, it doesn't matter. As long I always say, as long as they pronounce my name right, I've already won. As long as they know who you are, I've already won. So you're talking about me, you know, I'm already five steps ahead or we're already shooting the stars. And as you become super busy and in life in general, when you become super busy and focused on a goal, you're blinders. You can't even see the noise. You know, you can't even see who's making jokes or opinions or whatnot.
Yeah.
So I, call me what you want. Just don't call me late for dinner is what I heard. My mom told me, you know, just don't disrespect me, you know?
Yeah. And I feel the same way. And I just think that, we're in a time, man, where like independent people can do really cool fucking shit. Like Steve can do his cool show. Like I can try and do my show as cool as I can do it. Then you've got, you know, Ricky and Emig that are doing their thing. Like it's fucking cool, man. And there's never like a thing with me where, I think that there's not enough room for people either. Like that's sort of, to me, I want this whole space to do well, like a rising tide floats all boats essentially, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, I think that now with the technology that we have, the internet, with the access that we've got, with just the general media landscape, it's like we could really make a difference, you know, by just through our own channels. And it's like, grab a specific audience, grow that audience, and turn these like kind of casual people that might see a fucking clickbaity YouTube thumbnail and, you know, like 600,000-700,000 views on that video. It's like, you're not getting 600,000 people into Anaheim Stadium. It's like, this is moto. Like we want Supercross and motocross to have as many fucking eyeballs as possible. And it's like, there's a formula, like other sports have done it. And it's like, we've got to execute that similar formula. And I think we've got a fucking rad sport, man. We've got great personalities, you know, even a guy like yourself, like there's so many people that are in this sport that we can like essentially do what these other sports have done that have blown up so massive over the last like kind of 10 years, you know?
And the encouraging thing is to be the optimist and, you know, I think it is going that way.
Yeah,
like, I think there's some great young talented people that I get to work with. There's guys like you that I think we're about to take that next step. I think there's some great young athletes, like, you know, America has Max Volin coming up, you know, there's Styles Robertson. There's great people. Yeah, there's great people that are working with me on those clients to ensure their success, to ensure we get the Tom Brady, we get the LeBron, we get the next, you know, and we can create a superstar. And it has been missing and it has been stale. You know, we've got to build superstar after superstar and legacy after legacy. And it feels like that's gone a little, you know, since maybe Dungy and Ryan, but they never really won the personality contests either when they were racing. So like, if my mark was on the sport, it was like, oh, you always knew a Lucas Model guy because daddy to tell it how it is. And they were fun and they got more non-endemic deals because of, you know, just the certain situations. My style to represent an athlete and represent an athlete successfully going forward in the digital age and, you know, and the content age is to, you know, be outgoing, be yourself and, you know, be very open and honest, you know, kind of, I think kind of like how Pastrana was in those days, kind of being an open book. And, you know, that's what I would like that legacy and that's my vision where the sport is going. So I think it's in good hands. And I want, like, there's a lot of old school thinking involved, which is frustrating.
Hey, they're all going to fucking retire soon. They'll all be dead and fucking gone.
Yeah. So it's going to be exciting. And I'm stoked on the space and, you know, sports in general, especially. I love it. It's the best.
Dude. Yep. And I think too, like, we're in a good place too now, like, in my opinion, because, like, I understand the reason why guys have wanted to shy away from being outgoing and sort of like having any of that, their own real personality, because the media kind of would shit on them. Like, and again, to use that Hill thing, like, Hill fucking hated the media because of that whole deal that went down. And it's like, that's where, when I heard, like, just as a human reaction to a 16-year-old kid have that reaction to stuff that was said about him and whatever, like, yep, professional athlete, all good. But it's like that reaction that he had to those kinds of accusations around him, like, it changed his view on the sport. It changed his love of the sport. It changed because he didn't have, like, essentially, like, he didn't have a platform to then express himself and to say, like, dude, I've never even fucking smoked weed before. It's like, well, we all know the Hill now, and, like, he'll tell you exactly what he's done now. But at that time, it's like he didn't have his own platform. He didn't have his own voice, essentially. It's like he kind of it was still heavily the magazine era. And it's like, where does he get to then have his statement? Whereas I think nowadays athletes, and I look at Kenny, like, kind of when Kenny was sort of the wild child, like, social media wasn't as big as it is now. But I think now it's like, and I mean, Cooper was a great example of it at Hangtown. Like, he was at Hangtown where he just sort of went on Instagram and just fucking, like, went off about it. And it's like, he got to have his say and, like, tell his side of the story. So it's almost like nowadays, I think you can be yourself because you've got your own platform. These guys all have fuck loads of followers, so it's like, say what you want to the media, say what you want on the podium, and if dickheads like me want to fucking roast you for it, then fuck it, you've got your own platform anyway, so you can just turn back around Instagram live, go out to everybody and say, like, hey man, that was fucking full of shit, whatever that gypsy dude said about me, he's a fucking idiot. Obviously they're not gonna use it that colorful, but it's like they have that, their own platform now. So it's like, to me, I'm like, hey boys, go fucking nuts now. Like, you're safe from the media shit that used to cut you down in the past.
Well, back then there was a lot of misinformation, not talking about that situation, but back then there was a lot of misinformation.
Rumor, right? Yeah.
And it really was. But now, dude, I can know everything about everything all day long, you know, essentially through social media, you know, I'll know who was riding where. Who was there? Oh, how did he look? I saw him in the background of his shot, you know?
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
You just know, you generally know. So it is a fortunate situation. Better, you know?
Yeah, way better.
In that time, way better, because at that time, if you did something, you didn't know if it got misconstrued or whatnot. I think media is very accountable. I think it's very accessible for them to get the knowledge now, you know? So I don't believe there should be misinformation or spins or half truths in our sport. I think the storylines don't need them. The storylines don't need it. The truth's the truth, and it's pretty entertaining and engaging through motocross and supercross. I think it is an engaging sport, and a lot of sports probably aren't because you have so many different aspects to talk about: a motorcycle, mechanics, fitness, team, ability, personality, off the bike, on the bike. Yeah, monster girls. Yeah, you know, like
Faulkner so walking the track with his missus. Yeah. I really appreciate you coming on, man. It was cool to have a chat, and I definitely think I think we'll have to cross to you a bunch more times over the next few weeks as this gets going, and I really appreciate you keeping us in the loop with that so that we're able to sort of be on it, have a bit of a discussion, and when this press release goes live tomorrow from Feld, we'll put this up and hopefully people can get some good information out of it.
Definitely. Awesome, mate. Well, I appreciate it.
And we going to get Bill on or what?
Yeah, whenever. He's driving back. He's very mad at me.
Why?
I flew back. I flew and he wanted me to drive back the 40 hours.
You were the champ, bro.
I'm like, I'm in the trenches. I got an hour and a half layover in Dallas. That's what I was telling him all day. Bro, I'm in Dallas. I got a dang layover. He was just so mad.
Oh, so mad. So funny, dude.
So I just like, bro,
you were the champ, man. You were the champ, all right? You can't just be fucking expecting I'm going to sit in that car the whole time.
Not a chance, mate. I couldn't think of anything worse.
That's fucking funny. All right, bro. Well, I really appreciate it, man. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Take care, mate.
Thanks again, bro.
See you, bro.
All right. Lucas Myrtle, everybody. That was rad. Stoked to get his opinion on it all. Like I said, we're doing this obviously the day for everybody to see it, just because there's a bit of, I don't want to be that fucking guy. I don't want to be that guy that goes in, gets the scoop, and then drops it. I looked at some stuff from Racer X. Like, it's pretty obvious everyone knows what's going on in the media side of things now, but I don't want to be the guy that fucking drops it over everybody else. So this will come out tomorrow morning. Hopefully it gives you a bit of good insight. I might try and set up some similar calls just to do a bit more bench racing because, it's super exciting. Thanks so much to Myrtle. He's a fucking good dude, man. Like, he's a really, 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 really good dude. He had my back a bunch when I was over in the States, and he's definitely like a mover and shaker. He pretty much knows what's going on at all times in the sport. So, stoked to get him on. That's a real treat for us to get, that kind of insight. And, hopefully Villopoto on the show at some point soon, which would be pretty rad. So, appreciate you guys for watching/listening. Also, if you made it this far, subscribe and hit the bell notification too, because that YouTube's it's like Instagram, it's like everything. Even though you're subscribed, you might not get them, these shows show up. So that definitely helps us as well. I'm wearing the Gypsy Tales merch right now. You can add to our Instagram. Pretty sure that link is in our bio, but just search Gypsy Tales Shopify on Google. And then that's going to take you to our online store. And that definitely helps us. We ship to the US as well as pretty much everywhere else in the world. So thanks very much to Lucas Myrtle for coming on. Thanks to everybody for watching/listening. And we're going to keep you up to date over the next few weeks. Peace.